What does it take to be an independent filmmaker in Owensboro? That's what we're going to find out when we talk with PJ Starks and Eric Huskisson about their past and future movie projects. So it's lights, camera, action. And this is Inquire. From the Mystery Inquirer, I'm Don Wilkins. And joining me this week are PJ Starks and Eric Huskisson. And this is part two of my discussion with the two independent filmmakers. This week, we talk about what went into making Volumes of Blood Part 2 and where they are in the production of Part 3.
I'll just backtrack just a little bit, but like the first Volumes of Blood was very run and gun. It was you know, we were at the mercy of the library with the time frame and that kind of a thing. It was literally just a movie put together with a group of people who just love the horror genre. It was me saying, hey, I want to make a movie with my friends. And then when it took off and did so well, and we started talking about, like, hey, we should do a sequel. At that point, the only way to really truly justify a sequel would be to do everything better than what you did last time. So going into it, we said, you know, the stories have to be better. The acting has to be better. The special effects have to be better. Everything about the quality has to be better. Just across the board, everything needs to go up several notches. Like you said, it doesn't have to look like a million-dollar project, but just if you're able to step it up, take things to the next level as much as you possibly can, and I feel like we achieve that in every way. Still, I feel, just based off the two films we've done thus far, I think it's the stronger of the two, and that a lot of that is because of, like, Cassandra's special effects work. She did all the special effects in the film, sans one, and, I mean, she killed it, no pun intended. Yep. She did. She just, the realism and the level of professionalism with it, and the same goes with all the actors that we had in the film. You know, we've gotten very, very picky with who we've chosen to work with in terms of acting, because the one thing that's always bugged me is people automatically assume, well, if it's low-budget independent horror films, that means the acting is going to be bad or the story's going to be bad. And we kind of set out to prove that's not always the case. And you still have people who are super picky about what they watch in terms of narrative and in terms of acting. So you'll still see some people who didn't particularly care for someone's performance or whatever. But I think across the board, the acting was just so much better. And a lot of that has to, you know, comes down to the writing of the characters and giving the actors a lot more to work with.
And, you know, and there are plenty examples out there where you talk about independent films that, you know, that sort of, I guess, get struck with lightning. The main one that comes to my mind is always the Blair Witch Project.
Right.
You
right.
know,
mm-hmm.
That's sort of, I don't know if you would call that the gold standard, but I mean, you think about something that was pretty simple, you know, and the way it was done. I mean, simply, basically, they just gave a little handy cam to their actors and just let them go with it. It seemed, and it worked with the lighting and being out in the woods and so forth. And so how, I mean, whenever you see a film like that, I mean, is that kind of give you, is that why you keep kind of doing what you're doing? Or is it just, regardless if you ever kind of hit that lightning, you're going to keep doing it and keep trying to make movies regardless of how popular your films get?
I think really that's kind of the goal. It's, I'm really comfortable at where I am in life. So, I mean, would it be nice to make a movie that takes off like the Blair Witch Project and makes, you know, millions of dollars at the box office? I mean, yeah, that I would be stupid to say otherwise. But that's really not the intent. I mean, there have always been films that were made with no intentions whatsoever of truly taking off, like Kevin Smith's Clerks, or going back even further with George Romero's Night of the Living Dead. I think that even that one's even more of a gold standard when it comes to independent horror, because that was just a group of guys just like us who love the horror genre.
But you copyright your material because he made the mistake of not doing that with that film.
I think everyone since then has kind of said, yeah, we need to get our stuff copywritten and trademarked in some form or fashion so you don't run into that problem. But yeah, I mean that, you know. But no, the intent is not to get rich and famous. If it does happen, awesome. But I think, you know, if you set a level of expectation, which is I'm going to be this famous filmmaker, then you're setting yourself up for disappointment. Because the way I describe what I've been doing is I've been failing upward for over a decade now. Because, I mean, there have been things that I've done, like Volumes of Blood, that people really took to and said, hey, I really enjoy this. I want to see more. And then there have been other things that I've been a part of or I've created and people have said, this is garbage. I hope whoever did this never does it again. So it's really about, you know, just continuing forward, doing what you love, doing what you're passionate about, hoping other people, you know, appreciate what you're doing. And then just, you know, forging ahead and you keep doing it. And
yeah, we both love praise. Don't take it the wrong way, but we also don't mind constructive criticism either. But, you know, what I wanted to say is PJ and I are both pretty grounded going off what he said a minute ago. I mean, yeah, we're local boys, but would we love to be in Hollywood making movies? Well, anybody that is into this is not going to lie and say, no. But I mean, would I love to do this here in Owensboro and make a living at it? And would he love to do that? Yeah, if we could form the company and that's all we did, we would be on cloud nine. But, you know, the realism is it may not happen, but is it going to stop us from making film? No, we're still going to do it because we love doing it. But, yeah, I mean, if we could take off and do this for a living here in Owensboro, I mean, I don't think I'd have a complaint in the world.
No.
So now you guys are working on or trying to get funding for Volumes of Blood 3, right? So
Correct. Talk
about how that's going.
And
where it is as a project too.
Okay. Yeah. So we are, yes, we're in pre-production on the third Volumes of Blood. What we're trying to keep the same idea in mind, which is, you know, do it a little bit better and a little bit bigger this go around. And some of the ways we're doing that is with the previous two films, they were kind of throwbacks or they were just mainly like about having fun with the horror genre. They're very much, we're, by design, the Volumes of Blood films are meant to be a love letter to the horror genre in general, across the board, all the subgenres. There's a lot of references and nuances and homages and things like that. And we're still keeping with all that in the third Volumes of Blood. But the one thing that we're doing differently is, without being preachy, we do have quite a bit of social commentary going on in the third film, which we did not do on the previous installments. Because there's a lot of timely subject matter that seems to be going on lately that I think a lot of us have something to say about or want to touch on. And we've done that with this third film. And there's some things that have even, you know, touched our lives, like with mine, my oldest, you know, we deal with mental health issues with my oldest son. And so one of the, you know, and so I deal with that day in and day out. And when I wrote one of the sequences, one of them directly touches on, you know, mental health and how people kind of, you know, deal with that and that sort of a thing. So we are, you know, touching on some aspects like that. The other way is we're actually bringing in, we have some Hollywood talent attached, which is something we haven't done on the previous films in the terms of actually bringing some names to Owensboro. And that's, right now we have like Lynn Lowry. She was in David Cronenberg's Shivers. She was in George Romero's The Crazies. She's a working actress and she's fantastic and she's done a ton of stuff and she's read the script that, you know, for the role that we saw her in and she really enjoyed it and was like, yes, I want to be a part of this project. Helen Udy is another one. She's probably most well known for being on Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman, but she's done a bunch of other genre films. Such, she was in The Dead Zone with Christopher Walken. She was in the original My Bloody Valentine. And then we have Bill Oberst Jr., who he's an Emmy Award-winning actor. He's done a ton of stuff. Most recently, he finished filming recently on Rob Zombie's Three from Hell, which is his most recent project. And then we also have Tamara Glenn, who's come onto the project, and she's been a part of a whole bunch of things. Freddy's Nightmares, she was in Halloween 5, so she's part of that franchise.
So how are you guys meeting these folks? Is it going to these conventions, or, I mean, how are you guys...
It's a mix. A lot of it's either going to conventions or social media. Social media has opened up the door for communication in so many ways. And funny enough, that's another thing that's kind of put into the Volumes of Blood. That's kind of social media and how things are interact, you know, our lives and how they're intertwined and interwoven together and how people meet.
And we don't always contact them either. Sometimes they contact us.
Helen,
when we were doing casting for the film, Helen contacted us via email, which really floored me because like 2 days before that, I had just gotten done watching the original My Bloody Valentine, and then we got an email from her, so I fanned out a little bit because it's one of my favorite slasher films. But it's bringing in some Hollywood talent, that's another way we're doing things differently. And then, I mean, ultimately, like what Eric said, the biggest expenses in the film are special effects and then wardrobe. And then, of course, the rest is like travel, lodging, food, all those types of things. There's a lot that goes into making a film. But ultimately, like right where we're at right now and the financing is we are actively searching for anyone who is interested in helping us make this film, who's interested in being a part of something different and unique that's not being done consistently, you know, something that's, I mean, there are other filmmakers in the area, but I think ultimately, you know, I've been doing this for over 10 years, so I like to try to change things up, and I try to, we need to try to keep things fresh. So it's definitely something that you don't get to be a part of every day, especially in this part of the country.
Do you guys have a GoFundMe page or anything like that?
We did do a crowdfunding. We attempted a crowdfunding not too long ago. Right, but we did it around Christmas time, and it didn't pan out, and we were both dealing with some health issues and things that were going on, so we didn't get to push it like we should have, and it didn't get the attention it needed, and ultimately it didn't pan out. But like one of the things that we are doing with the film, and we were successful on the second film, was reaching out to local and regional businesses, having them come onto the project and do product placement within the film. So if there's anybody out there, you know, that any local businesses or any entrepreneurs or anyone looking to be a part of the project in that respect, that's how we were able to fund the second film, and it proved to be a pretty successful endeavor. So we're doing that again for the third one.
We have several packages that we kind of go by that have, you know, different monetary levels on them for people to pick from to get, you know, from overexposure almost to, you know, just a little bit of exposure. So, and there's a lot to go into some of them. So, the script is written. We're pretty much, about 75-90% cast. A lot of locations are already pretty much set. So basically we're just right at the finance stage so we can start filming.
Yeah.
So is this going to be kind of like part two or part one where it's going to be shot indoors, or is this going to be more outdoors, or a mix of both, or
it's going to be a mix. The first one took place almost entirely in the library, which is kind of what set it apart from a lot of other anthologies. The second one took place almost entirely in a house, and then this one, being that it's the closing of a trilogy, we kind of went with the anything goes approach, in the sense that the wraparound sequence takes place almost entirely in a police station. But what happens is when these individuals are arrested and this police detective interrogates each one of them, it then goes back to the night before and it shows you what their situation was. So at that point, it gets out of the police station, and that's where the anthology part comes in. And that takes place in different locations, from houses to out in the woods, places like that.
Is this police station, is it an actual police station, or is it a set you guys had to do?
It's going to be a mix, I think.
It's going to be a mix based off different locations.
Yeah. And that basically, the night before the things that happened, that's where the name of the film came from, Devil's Night, which is the night before Halloween. So Devil's Night, Volumes of Blood 3. So that's kind of where that came in.
Yeah. And even like in the second one, even though it took place almost entirely in the same house, like the just some behind-the-scenes knowledge. Like earlier you talked about The Kid in the Closet. That sequence actually took place in a completely different house, but mm-hmm. the way we shot everything and edited it together, it appears as if it took place in the yellow okay. house. But really, that was a completely different house.
Okay. I'll have to let her know that so that she might be able to get some sleep after that. But the whole cellar scene, that was in that house.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay. Pretty much that's yeah. the main thing that was set apart from that was that sequence. Well, no, Trick or Treat wasn't filmed in there either, where the girls watching TV.
The very very opening sequence, Trick or Treat sequence.
Now, one thing I did wonder about is why you guys chose to not use a fictional town or county in this. And, you know, you kept it in Willensboro, you kept it Dave. I mean, was there a reason behind that you didn't turn this into a fictional place or setting?
I guess ultimately, I like watching films that take place in real locations. I mean, and even if you get down to it, like John Carpenter's Halloween, while Haddonfield is not in Illinois, Haddonfield is a real place in mm-hmm. New Jersey. So, to a degree, Haddonfield is a real town. The difference is they didn't actually shoot in Haddonfield, New Jersey. They just they opted for a more Midwestern kind of location. But I guess ultimately the films that I really take to usually take place in actual towns or cities. And so when it came time to make the first volumes of Blood, I liked the idea of making the centralized location Owensboro. I guess ultimately is because, you know, I was born here, I was raised here. Owensboro is my Haddonfield. And when it came time to make, I guess you could, because there are, I'm a big slasher fan, there's a lot of slasher elements in Volumes of Blood 1 and 2. So when I created the face, like the face is my Michael Myers. So ultimately that's kind of my way of leaving my mark, because I'm proud of being from here. I like being from Owensboro. I like being a part of this community. So I thought by making a film and putting myself out there, ultimately making the community a part of that journey was just something that felt right to do.
I think it helps keep it local. That was another reason.
Yeah.
It keeps it a local thing. Like, it's what we're wanting to do is use local talent. Well, anybody that's interested in helping us out, they can contact us at bloodmoonpicks@gmail.com.
They can also look us up on Facebook. Right. We're extremely accessible on Facebook. It's a small town, right? So we're pretty easy to get in touch with. So, yeah, if anybody out there who runs a local business or just in general wants to find out more about the project or how they can become involved, just look us up on Facebook or, like Eric said, email us and we'll talk about it.
All right.
Love to hear from you.
All right, guys. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having us.
And that wrap up our show for this week. I want to invite you to join us after the outro for an extra outtake for this week's show. I want to thank PJ Starks and Eric Huskisson for joining me. To send us questions or provide feedback, email us at newscast@messenger-inquirer.com. Remember, you can find us on the Messenger Inquirer's website and iTunes, where you can subscribe to Inquirer. Until next time, I'm Don Wilkinson. Good day for Inquirer. Got into the house, and I realized, and I had no idea. I realized I've been in that house before, and it was during this past Christmas. And actually, one of my coworkers, it's her house, and so I went to her house during Christmas, and not thinking, I never knew that you guys had filmed a lot of your movie in that house. And so whenever she came into work the next day, and I said, "Did you know you had a horror movie filmed in your house?" And she was, "Oh yeah, I've met people who've asked me about that." And she said, "Actually, whenever I was touring the house and I went down into the cellar," and she said, "You know, if I ever wanted to kidnap somebody and chain them up down here, this would be a great place to do that." And I was like, you know, they did that in the film, right? And she and she was like, it doesn't surprise me. And, you know, so I told her some other things that happened in the film with the kid in the closet and everything. And so now I think she's somewhat freaked out about it, you know, knowing all these things kind of went down. But
why do they keep making sequels to bad movies?
I kind of liked the first one.